Welcome back, everybody, to the Enterprise Dish, where this is I'd like to think that they're all pretty special episodes, but this one's a little special too, because this week was VMworld. While I personally did not attend, Rick, rumor on the street and everything you posted on Twitter says you were at VMworld.
Yeah, I was. I actually just got back last night, so I apologize for the super casual situation here. But I did make it back into the office here today, Friday before holiday weekend here in the States. But one of the biggest and most significant events in data center technologies, I'd argue, in general, is VMworld. And it's really intense for me and everyone at Veeam. So it was actually one of my favorite VMworlds in a long time. So I actually really had a great time.
No, that's good. That's good. I mean, it's obviously good that you had a good time. Because who doesn't want to have a good time at a conference? I guess sometimes it can be a little bit stressful. But, what made this one, why do you like this one more than, say last year?
Well, I guess when I say good time, let's put that in context, because everyone knows that Veeam is like, the party and the VMworld party and all those other things. But when I say I had a good time, it means I really enjoyed the content, the structure, and the networking of the event. So I actually wasn't even at either of the parties, either the Veeam party or the VMworld party, very long at all. Because I've got a rule, Brad, nothing good happens after 10 p.m. So seriously.
It is very funny that you say that because Paul Thurrott did a write-up a while ago, and he says, what's it like going out with Brad, Mary Jo, and a couple of these other people? And the short version of it is Brad always leaves at 10:30, and the following morning I always say that Brad left at the right time.
Yep. I tell you, I've done way too many of these events and such that – one more hour of sleep is way more important than one more beer or, one more place to hit. So, when I said I had a great time, that's put that in context. I am an old man. But, I like some of the new capabilities that VMware are announcing. In fact, I go back and forth on the favorite. So I'll talk about both of them because they're tied.
Sure.
But the fact that there's now going to be AWS's RDS service to be available to run on vSphere. So this is really, really important. I mean, I hate to draw parallels, but, we have Azure Stack where you can take that Azure experience on-prem and have your full realm of control in terms of where the data lives. But RDS, which I've used in the hyperscale public cloud, if I could put that on vSphere and run that on-prem, that is very, very attractive, because I'm actually convinced that organizations are in an important window of when they're going to start changing their applications. And some of the database services to do that are very much part of that discussion. So I don't want to call it AWS Stack, right?
Yeah.
Something that you can bring home. But it's really nice that you're going to see some of these different models evolve. And I've been playing a lot with RDS recently. Specifically, right now, Veeam has the capability to back up RDS natively in AWS. As for will Veeam support this? I mean, I think eventually we will, but I don't have a specific timeline. But I'm really, really interested in that technology. So that's my first thing. And same thing over in Azure. You see the SQL Paths play available. And I talked to a lot of my DBA friends and all. And, DBAs and other database experts, they are migrating to this model of database paths versus, servers and installing SQL and managing it in the traditional way. So that was probably my first favorite item.
Interesting. So I want to ask you about that, because, logically, Amazon doesn't really have an on-premises play. They've done some playing around with some Linux stuff, I remember last year. And would it be fair to say that this is truly kind of Amazon's big play into walking into that localized data center?
I would have to say yes. There's, from a sticky point of view, okay, there are the transient things like Snowball and the way that the snowmobile and things where they can like help ingest to the cloud. But from an on-prem sticky standpoint, this is probably the best classic example. Well, they have had they've had like virtual appliance gateways that are something that would run as a virtual machine and allow you to channel data up into object storage. So they've had some other options, but this is a very significant change in the actual cloud consumption model of RDS and the database services, SQL, Oracle, MySQL, MariaDB, and Postgres are available to be consumed on-prem. So the consumption model lives within. Sure. That's the big difference with some of the existing motions from AWS. They've all historically been transient mechanisms for ingest, whereas this is a persistent consumption model on-prem. So this is a big step. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that it's something that people who look at apps, when they build them and how they change them,
yeah,
it's going to be something to think about. And I'm really stoked about it.
Yeah, this is a very classic win-win situation for both VMware and AWS, because obviously AWS gets some on-premises traction. VMware then kind of migrates up into the cloud and gets some cloud action. Like, these two companies had to have been just sitting in a room just saying, you know what, this is perfect.
You know, it took a while for it to kind of make sense. But, you know, last year the big news at VMworld was the availability, or at least the announcement, a different stage of the timing, but was around VMware Cloud on AWS. And within certain Amazon regions, you can actually deploy bare metal VMware clusters in AWS. So you can actually have your on-premises experience in AWS. And especially if you are very much a hybrid organization where you have some services in the cloud, this becomes really interesting because you have your VMware infrastructure in AWS facilities with complete immediate connectivity to the cloud native services like S3 or EC2 or RDS or one of the other 119 other hyperscale public cloud services available.
Yeah.
So VMC was a gateway, and now it's kind of interesting that it's coming back around. I think it's awesome.
Yeah. No, this is
other one. Yeah.
There was a lot of good stuff. I'm looking over there. My favorite announcement had to have been the ARM64 related stuff, because there's a couple reasons why. One, I think it kind of came out of left field for a lot of people. It was like, whoa, really? The other thing is I'm a big fan of ARM. Regardless, you know, I like Intel and those guys are all fine. But ARM in the data center, ARM on your laptop and all that kind of stuff, making its way outside of the phone, to me is a big deal, because it's going to change the market. It's going to give us more options, better battery life, potentially better compute, or at least, you know, it's a competitor. And so to see that VMware is talking about this stuff on ARM64 is makes me excited.
Yeah, that's my number two, was ESXi on ARM. And I don't want to say I was entirely like mind melted, blown away, but this really solves a practical element of getting started with some next gen solutions like IoT and edge and things like that. So, I really got to play this out over time, because this, in my opinion, is one of the issues where organizations have trouble getting started with next generation solutions, especially around the IoT use case. Sure. or edge computing use cases. Some of the platforms involved might be ARM. And the issue is, they aren't necessarily able to be managed and made available the same way that traditional x86 workloads have been. So where I'm going with that is, you could walk into a reliability issue. And this is where something like ESXi on ARM is really critical, because you could basically, I hate to say it, you can make an HA Raspberry Pi virtual machine or something like that, where these low processor workloads, and you don't want to just, you know, deploy everything on x86, because you might be walking into more power consumption and wasted equipment or such, but it may still drive an important line of business function. And when we have the availability of those workloads from an infrastructure level and a mechanism to keep them managed and the network controlled and segmented, QoS, all those other things are going to fall into play. Mm-hmm. It becomes really an interesting, interesting conversation.
No, it really is. And while the edge is obviously growing and expanding and IoT and all that stuff, we're still very much in the infancy of this market, right? People are connecting more and more things, but in the enterprise world, it's taking its time, as most things do. But there's still definitely people out there pushing the boundaries. And it's good to see just more people supporting alternative options rather than just saying, you know what, it has to be an Intel or it has to be x86 type scenario.
Yeah, and that there needs to be options. And I've long advocated use the right tools and the right platforms for the right technology need.
Sure.
You know, and there's definitely a market in the ARM space. So it's great to see that organizations can have that availability and management and some of those control mechanisms in place on those platforms.
Yep. Other things that were announced, and I believe this is relatively new for VMware, they announced a Platinum edition.
Platinum. I know. Platinum. It's like you need a kind of a higher level sometimes. I mean, Enterprise Plus, you know, those types of things. That's interesting because it also it's really integrating the app defense security strategy. That's really interesting because a lot of times organizations have gone, you know, down a number of different paths, whether it's micro segmentation on the network or overly configuring the apps. But the fact that we could make the platform stack from a hypervisor standpoint centered around known good states and security models, it's an interesting way. And, you know, I talk to a lot of organizations who are in highly secure environments, and these are the types of things that actually may be very relevant to their use cases.
Yeah, this will be it's just another part of a solution stack. And as always, I'm a big fan of options, and it's just another option that you can do to help, I don't know, just secure and make your life a little bit easier, which is always a fun thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And having visibility into the apps that you're using and how they're interacting with other apps, that's actually really important. So, I mean, you know, we work in a place, in a world now where we have so many apps and so many systems that those dependencies can be very, very important when we think about their communication to other apps and to other systems. So if this is a tool that'll help that use case, then I'm sure it'll be well received in the market.
Yep. And then the other thing, that kind of major announcements, at least by VMware's standards, is that they announced an acquisition of Cloud Health Technologies, which I think is a very smart move. They said in their presentation that a lot of companies are using multi-cloud, and that makes complete sense. I hear that all the time. It's even though Microsoft will tell you that they have data centers all around the world, you don't always want to put all your eggs in one vendor's basket, and so people will be running Azure and AWS or AWS and Google Cloud, or there's a whole bunch of other smaller companies like Green Cloud and those kinds of things. And so, correct me if I'm wrong here, but this Cloud Health technology is going to help you manage all that. Does that sound about right?
Well, absolutely. It's clearly a multi-cloud play, and that's necessary today. I think it's right down the middle. When I talk to enterprises, it's 50% are AWS and 50% are Azure. And VMware's done a lot of good things for AWS, but maybe this Cloud Health technologies as they integrate it into, I'm not really sure where it's going to sit in, you know, is it going to sit on top of vSphere? Is it going to be part of vRealize or some of their orchestration capabilities? I'm not quite sure where it's going to sit, but they need to have an answer. The market demands to have capabilities in multiple clouds today. Mm-hmm. And Veeam sees that. And I talk to enterprises every day, and it's like, you know, Amazon and Azure is where the conversation goes mostly. One out of, I don't know, 20 or 50 or so might be on Google Cloud or yet a different cloud. But that move with Cloud Health is really, I think, a strong play towards the multi-cloud strategy. And, you know, that's the business of this business. You got to have partners of all types. And, you know, if you're any company and you have partners left and right, those two might, you know, hate each other greatly, but your market and your customer base doesn't necessarily think it that way. And so that's the whole that's the business reason to have these types of multi-cloud plays.
No, that's actually a really interesting point you bring up, is that, yeah, Amazon and Azure, they're not really friends, right? They're, they're both gunning for the same market. They're gunning for the same large clients. But if VMware can find itself and be the proper middleman that makes those two friends, at least to the end user, that's a huge win for them. Huge win.
It is. And, you know, believe it or not, Microsoft and VMware are in an few areas partners in some regards, because you might think that their Hyper-V team isn't really getting along with their vSphere teams, right? And that's probably very true. But if you think about, at least in vSphere, Microsoft wants Windows OSs to run properly as virtual machines. So there's a relationship there. And if you think about the Azure thing, and if VMware wants to do anything around enabling Azure consumption through whatever this Cloud Health end product will be, then I'm sure Microsoft would entertain it, right? So, you know, Veeam has examples there where we have some partners where, you know, we might, you know, we might partner in a technology but differ in the field on different matters. And the bigger the companies are, the more intricate and complicated some of those lines get.
Yep. Yeah, no, that's a very good point. And then also you guys had an announcement, a little thing with Cisco, isn't that right?
That is right, and I'm really, really happy for this, because we have been scheming these types of things for quite a while, and there will be more things like this. But on Tuesday of last week at VMworld, we announced – well, actually, that's interesting, because it's not actually our offering, but we are definitely joint with Cisco in this. Mm-hmm. So Cisco has a new product that will be available later this year, which is – okay, I'll give you the. I'm going to take a little bit of time and tell you the official name, and then I'm going to turn around and tell you what it does. Okay, because you might hear the official name and you might not get it. But what it is called is the Veeam Hyper Availability Platform on Cisco HyperFlex.
Wow.
Okay, that's the official name. What is this? Well, actually, I think that might not be what Cisco will call it. I'm just reading our notes inside, but basically, Cisco has a HCI platform, HyperFlex. It's built on Cisco servers, and then there's a completely software-defined storage across all these nodes, which is – if those of some individuals are familiar with the SpringPath technology, which Cisco acquired. So it's basically a mechanism to have a HCI solution with storage across all these nodes. What Cisco is doing in regards to Veeam is we are combining this – HyperFlex cluster, and the explicit use case is Veeam backup storage. You know, Veeam is a software company. Trust me, we got to stick to software. We're not really capable of getting into hardware. I mean, we'd have to change so much of our business models to do that. And then on top of that, our partnerships with basically everyone would have to be reevaluated. So when we look at Cisco and what they have with some of their different industry standard servers and the HCI platform like HyperFlex, this is a really good use case. So there is a taste in the market for pre-configured hardware ready to go to serve as your backup target. And that's really what this solution is going to do. So it's basically a HyperFlex cluster with many nodes pre-configured and a lot of storage, and it's ready to go as a Veeam target. So Veeam backups can just be sent into this device, this HyperFlex HCI cluster, really efficiently. So it's a Cisco offering. So Cisco is actually going to sell it, but it is basically preloaded with Veeam. I guess the best way to explain it is, you remember how we used to buy PCs and laptops and they had the sticker Intel inside, or Microsoft Windows, you know, little stickers. It's kind of something like that.
Gotcha.
And it's ready to go on a you know, data center enterprise scale, and it'll be available this fourth quarter of this year. And, you know, we've felt some, you know, taste from customers in the market for pre-configured, ready-to-go backup storage devices that take care of the software element too. It comes back to the kind of like how much did you play with Legos when you were a kid type of question. And what I mean by that is, did you want to build it yourself, or did you just want something ready to go? Mm-hmm. And we end up talking to both people today. And I, you know, have all of this time with Veeam kind of advocated, you know, build the different components to get this really good data flow. But on scale for larger environments, there is a preference for a pre-configured target ready to go that would just receive all this backup data. And so this HyperFlex solution is the first of these, and we're really excited to have announced that last week.
Yeah, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. If you're dealing with, you know, hundreds of thousands of users, or if you're a 100,000 person company and you just need an appliance that you can just plug in, you know it's going to work, it's going to replicate just like the other 10 machines that you have. I mean, there's value in that, and where you just don't want to screw with it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, people prefer simplicity and scalability and integratedness, if mm-hmm. those are words, you know. So there's definitely a taste for that in the market, and those are some of the reasons why it drove us to that.
Yeah, I mean, it makes complete sense. And so it'll be interesting to see how that works out for you guys and watch that little product just take off. Hopefully it's green pastures ahead.
I want one, so maybe yeah. I can get one in my lab. So, yeah, I mean, if I can't remember the specs on how many nodes it starts at, but, you know, that's the whole beauty of HCI. Mm-hmm. You can start and, you know, expand node count as you need. So it's a very scalable solution in that regard.
Very cool. Any other final thoughts from VMworld, Rick, before we shut her down?
Well, I'm actually kind of bummed it's going back to San Francisco. I'm starting to fall in love with Las Vegas, you know.
Oh, so, really?
You know, Vegas, can I make this my dish, actually?
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's dish on Las Vegas. Brad, you and I both, I don't know, scores of times been to Vegas, right? Mm-hmm. I've probably gone 20 or 30 times in my just my adult life. Anyways, until like about – actually, specifically until 2016, I never left the Strip. So that's all I knew about Las Vegas. But when I turned 40, my wife threw like a little surprise birthday party for me. Well, it wasn't really a surprise. I knew it was coming, but I didn't know who was going to attend.
Gotcha.
But we ended up doing Vegas family style. And I stayed – because, you know, with the kids and everything, we ended up not just staying in a Vegas hotel. We ended up staying at a timeshare, kind of a condo situation.
Okay.
And this particular property, if they're not full of timeshare tenants, they will open it up to just hotel rentals through, you know, one of the top hotel brands in the U.S. And it's cheap. There's free parking. There's no casino. It's clean, modern, and nice. So we had a nice place. And then we rented a car. And we went up into the mountains and to a couple of different things all across southern Nevada, lack of a better word. And I really enjoy Las Vegas now that I know how to do it. In fact, even at VMworld, I stayed at that condo because I really liked that place.
And interesting.
It's right behind the Sands Expo. So it's very accessible, even though VMworld was at Mandalay. Mm-hmm. But you know, once I figured out Las Vegas, I kind of like it. So it was kind of bittersweet that I'll not be getting back to Las Vegas. I'm sure I'll be there for something else, but at least not for VMworld. And, you know, I'll flip that on the other end, is that many people I know kind of bemoan Las Vegas, but it works for industry events.
It does.
And you can get anything. You can get any price point. I talked to one individual that had a $25 a night hotel room.
Wow.
Can't speak to any quality of service, but it just goes up from there. Mm-hmm. And the same with food, and there's entertainment. And I didn't step foot in a single casino, right, just because I came in a different way. So, I guess I'm going to dish that I'm sad that VMware is moving it back to San Francisco.
Yeah, as much as I don't really like Vegas, it does handle a lot of people very well. There's no other way to describe it.
Yeah, it's good at what it does.
Yep. Very cool. I actually might want to try to get that condo location, because the Sands Expo is where I spend probably, I don't know, 80-90% of my time when we're at CES, because that's where all the presentations are.
Yeah, it's a gem. So, and there's a couple others there. Yeah, definitely. I'll send you that.
Very cool, Rick. Well, we very much appreciate your time, you know, letting us know what's going on at VMworld. Obviously, a big industry event that happens every year. And we appreciate you filling us in. So, folks, that wraps it up for this edition of the Enterprise Dish. Make sure to, you know, like and subscribe and all that good stuff down below. And we'll catch you right back here next time and bringing you everything you need to know about the IT pro world.